well. Some of us can produce something better, but another
point. Do you want a laser? Do you want a laser pointer? Does somebody have one?
Right, so it's my pleasure to be here again. First of all, I have to probably apologize to some of the audience here because this is kind of like old topics, and we did that like a year ago. So I give this talk in a Santa Fe workshop, but the paper is just out like 2 months ago, so in that sense, new. So let me begin with the typical first slides. So the problem we try to solve is, again, it's a little hierarchy problems. So as you know, this is a standard model, Higgs, with a mass parameter here. So it's very UV sensitive in the sense that you do the quantum calculation, you get this kind of like a log the quadratic divergence. So if you said you take a cutoff to be very slow, very low, you still have a large contribution. But because of the precision measurement, you cannot take it like to TV, because this has been constrained by all the measurement. So you have to set this like above, let's say, by TV. And also because the Higgs mass is bound to be like lower than 200 GeV, and just do the calculation, if you assume standard model is a theory up to this kind of scale, you'll find it's a little bit fine-tuned to about 1%. Twin Higgs mechanism was proposed to solve this problem. First saying Higgs is a pseudo-Gödel boson and do something else. And right now, we have two different models. One is called a mirror model. The other one is a Laplace model. The basic structure is, in the mirror model, you have two standard models. One is our standard model. The other one is just hidden sectors. That is the exact copy. And for the Laplace model, we have, instead of double the standard model, you just introduce another SU2. And this is a very well-known Laplace symmetric model, SU2L cross SU2R. And there's a few things that I have to remind you about this type of model. First of all, it's using the simplest symmetry that you can imagine is a Z2 to protect the Higgs mass. Because of that, you can actually let this Z2 to be exact in your theory. So, and this mechanism actually works to cancel the quadratic divergence. The quadratic divergence. And the other important thing is, in the model originally proposed, we don't have the three-level quartic terms. Even without that, we can actually reduce the fine-tuning to 10%. So this just to point out that we still have quite a lot of room to have an improvement. Okay, so because of that, the straightforward thing to do is just saying, okay, if I can introduce a quartic term for the Higgs, a three-level quartic term, but this quartic term somehow doesn't generate a tree level, you know, large maximum for the standard model Higgs, we can actually make the fine tuning even less.
Can I ask you a question just to normalize my thinking? If I look at a composite Higgs with no special structure, right, then the same small parameter suppresses the mass and the Porting coupling.
That's right.
And without any tuning, the Higgs VEV is too large.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So relative to that, are you actually doing better than that model?
Yeah. We okay. Without doing this, like you said, all the mass term, Porting terms come from the same small parameters.
Right.
So both of them are small. Actually, you can expect the fine tuning will not be reduced.
Right.
But then, you know, it's a little small fine-tuning things. Everywhere you get a factor of 2 or 3, you square it. You know,
I hear you're telling me that it's the same as that composite Higgs. Are you just saying that it's the same in principle, but then when you calculate it carefully, you find some factors that go your way?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's the first thing. First of all, the thing I have to say. And that factor of 2 or 3 comes from the structure of the... your representation, your operator, because when you expand it, your mass term and the quartic term will come out in the different combination.
Okay.
And that's one thing. So that is also why we want this quartic to be, we want to design this quartic. Because if you can do that, you can decouple the two things. You can suppress a mass term, but you get a big quartic for P.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is the motivation.
So you're going to try to do better than...
Yeah, we are trying to do better than what is proposed.
Can you remind me why just having a quartic helps the fine-tuning issue?
Well, because the VEV is just B m squared over lambda, right? So if you can have a big quartic, you are allowed to have big m squared. So the fine-tuning will be less to get the same VEV. Right? So the question we begin to ask is there is a simple way to introduce this quartic. So we do want to make the model ugly. So the point is we wanted something simple. And the answer is yes. And that has been done by these people, Chaco, Nomura, Papucci, and Carax. And what they did is in the they used some special way to introduce this quartic in the mirror model. And this is some of the important feature. In this model, when you do this, the photon in the mirror sector become massive. That's just one feature. And in the original, this is massless. It's like our photon. It's an exact copy of standard model. It's our photon. It's like our photon is massless. But when you do this, what they did, the photon become massive. Okay, so it's, you know, either good or bad. The one good thing you can think of is, you know, if because it's massive, you don't have to really worry about it. The photon-photon mixing, the mini charge thing constraint. Even though, you know, it's okay for the original model because we estimated the mixing begin like four loops, so it's pretty small, but it's kind of a nice feature to have. But it's kind of bad because, you know, it might be difficult in cosmology because the mirror sector doesn't have photon to decay to, so a lot of particle will be just too abundant. So, well, so the next question is, can we do the same things? Because they have found the simple way to do it, can we do the same thing for the left-right model? The first thinking is, you know, just sit down and think about it, look at the structure. You immediately comes out, no, because I'll show you explicitly later, but the objection is because we don't have the mirror photon, so it's our photon become massive if you use this mechanism. So as you know, it's very bad.
So you're going to explain what the connection is between the massive photon and this quartic?
Yes. So what we are trying to do is we try to twist this mechanism a little bit, and to be able to do the same things, but to keep this our photon massless as we observe. Okay. So this is the main thing that we did. So we try to twist it a little bit. So this is an outline of the rest of the talk. I will annoy you again by telling you again what is the twin mechanism, because I need that to explain why our quartic works without calculations. So because we are focused on left-right model, we will again get into a little bit detail of what the basic structure of the left-right twin takes model is. And then I'll tell you what we call the little twins. What is a way to introduce this quartic. I will tell you what it is. And then I will do some phenomenology. And I will first review some of the work have been done and also some of the new work we are begin to doing it. And I'll conclude. So first of all, again, the Higgs is now like a prion, is a Goldstone boson, is pseudo at the end. But so this is nice because it's naturally massless at three level. But as you might find, and you do calculation, you know there's still one of corrections, because actually the original problem is not the three level mass is large, it's because the one loop collection is large. And because you have to be pseudo, because you need the potential for the Higgs, and somehow, somewhere in your model, this global symmetry had to be broken, and almost by default, you have some heartbreaking coupling in your model. And this will introduce the quadratic divergence, so we know extra structure is needed. And this is where the little Higgs people come in to, you know, to do the model building to introduce new mechanism to solve the problems. And the alternative will be the twin mechanism, which is on top of the, by saying this Higgs is a Goldstone boson, we impose a discrete symmetry. And of course, we need some global symmetry to get a Goldstone boson out, and which is the simple one we can think of is SU4. You impose SU4 in the Higgs potential, then you introduce your scalar, and this scalar have to be transformed as a fundamental under this SU4. So when you give it a bath, you break SU4 to SU3, it gives you some seven Goldstone boson. And the basic structure is, because of this special representation, it's four element, you can split them into 2-2. And under this 2-2, also in the in the SU4, you have a subgroup which is SU2 cross SU2. So this A will correspond to this A, and this B corresponds to this B. So it's a doublet under this SU2, and this is a doublet under this SU2. So together, they are a fundamental under this SU4. This is a basic structure. Of course, SU4 is explicitly broken, and Goldstone boson will get a mass and quartic everything as a potential. So now you have to begin trying to do the calculation at one loops. So without doing any calculation, you just write down what is allowed, the potential which is allowed. Because this is a gauge symmetry, you have to be preserved all the time. So you write down all the SU2 invariant terms. This is it. Now up to the quadratics, because we just want to look at the quadratic divergence. And in principle, you can have both of them, both coefficients to be different. This is the most general operator you can write down. But by imposing a Z2 here, this is what we come in. We say, okay, imposing the Z2, that exchange L and R, you are constrained the two coefficients to be the same. Then you can actually combine them and make you to be a SU4 invariant. So because this SU4 invariant, it doesn't contribute any potential to your Goldstone boson. So the quadratic divergence is gone. And because this doesn't depend on your calculation, so this must be true at all loop. So how about left-right model? Actually, the one I talk about is the left-right model. So it's basically just saying, okay, now the Z2 discrete symmetry now is identified as a left-right symmetry. You exchange left-handed particle and right-handed particle. As a usual left-right model, your left-handed quark is a doublet. And now all the right-handed quark will also be packed into a doublet under SU2R. So this have become a Z2, the left-right symmetry between them. So then now your Higgs will be again is a doublet and doublet under the SU2 and SU2R. The I is just you can have a multiple copy of this set. So just to remind you, this part is basically the same as the traditional left-right model. There's no difference. The only difference is coming when you introduce this guy, because in the traditional left-right model, you introduce a triplet or bi-doublet, and now we are doing two doublet, not bi-doublet. Okay, because the reason is just because twin mechanism seems to work only in this special representation. So, okay. So, in more detail, actually we need two set of hits. The I have to be two, one and two. So we just call the H and H hat is both fundamental under SU4. The second set is needed because we want to get around the bound coming from the Z search. So this is the way you can represent the Higgs in the low energy. When you integrate out the radial mode, you keep only all the Goldstone mode, and you can write out the Higgs representation at this. So this is some kind of like pion, and this is a flat structure, this is a pion. So this is the standard model Higgs. And this is an extra charge guy and a pseudo scalar. Alright, so the gauge sector is again is like a left-right model.
Can you say roughly why having extra Higgs helps you with the Z prime search?
Yeah, I'll show you in this transparency.
Okay.
It's very, very trivial. The gauge symmetry is the usual one. SU2, SU2 plus U1B minus L. So left-right symmetry just telling you the two coupling have to be the same. And the VEF will break the SU2R cos U1 to just a U1 hypercharge, usual. So then you calculate the mass of this heavy. Because of this breaking, you get the W and the Z. And they are both heavy because they are extra. Then you calculate the mass because you have two set of Higgs. They both contribute. So basically, the mass will be structured like this. Of course, I mean, Z and S are different because you have different G coupling. But basically, this is the thing that I would point out. You have two VEF coming in. So if you have only one, you are bound to have the F to be a few TeV. And that's two bits to reduce the fine-tuning because then your cutoff had to be very high. So you just introduce twos, then one is big and the other one can be small, remain small. So now the important things, you have to introduce a top sector also. So in addition to the QL and QR for each family, like the left-right model, what we have to do is we have to introduce a new top. So this new top is singlet under SU2 plus SU2, but you have a B minus L charge, and they are the vector line. So by introduce these two particles, we can write down the top Yukawa coupling. Actually, if you look at this is just exactly like standard model, and this is just a copy of the standard model, if you forget about the left or right index. And then you can introduce a mass term to decouple this vector-like particle. So we call it M. And remember this M because it's going to be important. It's important because it can be arbitrarily small, so you can throw it away. So this Yukawa actually you just change all the right. If you let these two Yukawa coupling to be the same, you have an exact left right symmetry. Right. So
you're making these singlets under the SU2s, that's just the simplest choice, or is that
this
necessary choice?
Yeah, this is a simple try because it's just because you have a doublet here, you need some singlet to complete the Yukawa coupling, the simplest one to be able to do, yes. Otherwise, if you don't have this, you cannot write out this, then you have a problem of getting a top mass. Yeah.
So this is not SU4 in
mind. No, this is not SU4
so
in
variant. Reintroduce quadratic divergence.
You introduce log divergence. This will is what I have shown you earlier,
mm-hmm.
you need to you cancel all the quadratic divergence by just require left right symmetry. This only symmetry that you need. It's still because this have an exact left right symmetry, so the quadratic divergence will be cancelled. Okay, so and if you make it SU4 invariant and break it by some kind of soft mass here, then you have finite contribution. You don't even have log. Now you have log divergence. It's fine.
So what happens, what are the physical right-handed top quark, and what happens to the guy that's the combination.
Yeah.
It's not the physical one.
Yeah. So depend on what M you choose. So they have kind of like a mixture. So the let's say this is our talk, left handed talk. So our right handed talk will be this guy and this guy, the somehow linear combination. So depend on what M is. Yeah, the mixing is depend on M, it's proportional to M, M over F, something like that. So this is just to show you some result. Just have to look at this line. So if you take the cutoff to be 10 TV, this is the original model before you do the three-level quartet, and this is what we get, it's like 10%.
Can I just ask you, just conceptually, I still don't understand why these two VEBs help you. So I understand that you can have, if you have a big VEB, you can have another VEB that's small.
Yeah.
But then why does that small VEB
actually
control the tuning? Because you would think that once you've broken the SU2, the SU4,
yes.
Right? That
yeah.
Anyway, so why is it that the small one
yeah.
is actually helping you with the tuning?
Yeah, I was not being clear because I didn't tell you the full story. So let's say you have this guy big, and this guy small, okay? So, and now the crucial point is you can impose some parity. You can forbid this scalar to couple to the top quartz. And you only allow this guy to couple to the top quartz. So when you do the loop calculations, the main contribution is coming from the top. And your quote, you have a y to the fourth, or y to the fourth, and then you proportional to this VEB, and this VEB is keep small, so your fine tuning will be less.
Is there some limit where there's an additional z2 in the Higgs
yes.
sector?
Yes.
And if
in
that z2
was
exact,
right.
you would get a zero top mass or something like that.
Oh no, not zero top mass. Okay, let me put it the other way. So let impose a special parity, under which this guy is odd, and everything else is even. Alright, so that means you cannot replace this with the head guy, because this is the only hard particle in the operator.
Okay.
So it's not coupled to this guy, so if the VEB doesn't come in at all in a loop, the top loop calculation, so you know, the one
is
loop
that,
doesn't
is that
know.
Breaking your left-right symmetry?
It's spontaneously broken. So
does that reintroduce?
No, you introduce as the F square or F hat square. Right, because it's spontaneously broken. So you come in, like the F is a cutoff. So you have a cutoff square, but cutoff is replaced by the F.
So fundamentally, he still has his Z2, his original Z. His left-right symmetry is still fundamentally okay.
Yeah, it's spontaneously broken, but it's okay.
Well, except you had some coupling where you chose one guy to couple and another guy not to.
No. This is a four component. The discrete symmetry is between, within itself. It's not like between this head and non-head. It's between itself. So the Z2 is between the F itself and another Z2 between the F hat itself. So by decouple F hat, throwing F hat away, doesn't affect the left-right symmetry.
Mm-hmm.
Do you attempt to expand the hierarchy between these two Fs, or just have them as...
Yeah, there's a hierarchy. I'll show you the hierarchy. So let me see. I'll show you when I get to the phenomenology.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is where it's becoming important. So now come to the three-level quartet. So I will first explain to you what these people have done. So it's actually first used by Kaplan and Smosh in the Little Higgs model with a simple group, and then by these people in the twin model. So that's again, you have two sets of Higgs, H and H hat. They are four components. The point is, you just say, okay, my VEB is misaligned, so I have one guy sit here, the other guy sit there. Okay, so then you write out this operator. Okay, so you can see it's a mixture of the head with the hat and without the hat. And then you go to the Goldstone expansion. Goldstone boson expansion, like this. So this is the doublet under our SU2, and this is also doublet under our SU2. And this is another doublet under the mirror SU2. Okay, so this is charged, this neutral. And now you put a VAP here and VAP there. Of course, there's a dot, 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 a lot of expansion. I just keep the leading order term in view. So this is the first leading order term can come out from the expansion. Here and here. Okay. So you just do this operator and you expand it. You can see this dot this, you get a square, and then this dot this. So this will become F hat multiplied by C, because if you take this piece, it will be too much, too many few. Right? So you have something like this. Then you square, then you can see you give mass to C, which is the mirror Higgs particle, and you never give a mass to our standard model Higgs. If you turn it around, then this guy will multiply with this guy. Then you can see F hat will multiply by H hat and H. You get a mass sense. Right. So because of this misalignment, you can see the SU2 cos U1 in this sector is totally broken. Usually SU2 cross U1 break to U1, but then because two breaking direction will break it totally, so the photon become massive. So we want to do it in the left-right angle as I showed to you, because we don't have two U1. Right? This is a shared U1 in the left-right angle. We are SU2 L cross SU2 R cross U1 V minus L. So this is a shared U1. So if you do the same thing, this combination will break to nothing. And so that means our hypercharge is gone. Then that means our photon is massive after electrolytic symmetry breaking. So how do we turn it around? So of course, you can try to do some different U1B minus L charge assignment, asymmetric kind of assignment, or equivalently, you can do the same thing without touching the charge, just leave the charge alone, but you can construct different operator. They are actually just rotating around, and you do this language you just translate to the other language. It's the same thing. So I will propose writing down this operator, and then we keep the VAP online so that our photon will not be broken. Our hypercharge SU1 hypercharge will not be broken. So you have to keep it online. But we write down this operator. So again, if you look at this operator, this is a right-handed piece, it's fine, it's quartic. It's already quartic, right? So usually the mass term coming from the expansion due to the right-handed piece. But because of this, you have a tau 2 here. Tau 2 is the 0, minus 1, 1, 0, the sigma 2 thing. So because of this, it's almost like a misalignment. So you will not get the mass terms for the peaks. For the left-handed Higgs, you get mass term for the right-handed Higgs. All right. So this is probably works. So you might ask, is the left-right symmetry destroyed because it doesn't look left-right? You change left and right, right?
So when you say this, you mean that they enter in this combination with a relative unit coefficient?
Yes.
That's what you mean.
Yeah. This is a combination with coefficients. Yes.
And it doesn't come with.
Yeah.
Other operators are also not there. That's also
right.
Part of the state.
Yes. Right. So, fortunately, you can actually see we have actually two different kind of like a parity, left-right parity in the left-right model have been known, is well known. So first of all, you just change left and right without doing nothing else. Or you can just do the complex conjugate and put a this is sigma 2 again. Right? You can do this. You can either choose this or choose this. They are both, can be identified as left-right symmetry. It's just one have a charge conjugation or this is confusing. So it just have compact conjugates. Right, so we can say for the non-head guy, we have this pairing. For the head guy, you have this. And if you want, you can just put that operator back. You do this transformation. Because remember, you know, this guy will go to this guy, you know, and this guy, and this guy, because head, you have an extra sigma 2, and I don't know how the compact conjugate go, but because, there's a square, I'm sorry, there's a square here.
What about the term where you put the epsilon in the HL, back in the HL, HL, isn't that also, sorry, by epsilon I mean the tau 2.
Okay.
If you put the tau 2, if you write another operator where the tau 2 is in the left,
oh, if you do that?
And where there's no tau 2 on the right, isn't that also allowed?
No, because you need tau 2 on the right. Because this is where the mass term is generated. Because this is already quartic.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah,
yeah, this is where the mass term is.
Yeah,
you have to do something about this on this side.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. You can do this transformation, you will find the first term will transform to the second term, and vice versa. So the combination is invariant, and this kind of combination. So this is not perfect because one of the coupling in the model is not doesn't like this transformation, which is the U1B minus L. So if you do one of this, you will see there's a contradiction. There's no consistent transformation on the gauge field of U1B minus L, because one requires you to have to keep the sign, the other one requires you to flip the sign. So that means this U1 coupling break that combination of transformation. But all this U1 coupling or all the gauge coupling preserve the usual, you know, left-right symmetry. And of course then the other way, right? That new quartic will break this combination. Okay? So some of the coupling break this, some of the coupling break that. So what is nice is we have kind of like an overdone in the sense that we cancel all loop in the quadratic divergence, we don't need that, right? So we can actually use that room, you know, extra room to give us some freedoms. So and here it is, because every coupling in the model break only one symmetry. And both of these symmetries are equally powerful to be used as a twin symmetry. So that means you can cancel the quadratic divergence. So you just have to preserve one. So it's like in the little Higgs model, the quadratic divergence will only be generated where both symmetries are broken. So this is called the collective broken of the global symmetry. Now we have a discrete symmetry. So you expect naively the quadratic divergence will arise at least two loops. So this is how you suppress the divergence. Actually, we analyze is actually begin at three loops, and it is proportional to g squared, and it's small. So this is basically the operator, the small operator that we introduced. Of course, you can do a little bit more by suppress the divergence. So you can make this as you form variant. So if you do this, you have a log divergence in the potential in the mass square. If you do extra, you can even suppress that. You make it finite, but you need the extra works. So you have to introduce a lot of new particles. Then you have to introduce another two mass parameters to decouple these two vector line sets. And then by left-right symmetry, you require them to be the same. You can do that.
Somehow I lost that last argument. Go back. So once again, why do you need those vector-like quarks?
Oh, you just have you. This is not SU4 invariant. So
right.
This guy would generate a quadratic, a log divergence to the mass square. It's not big, but it's sizable. So you have a log divergence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if you want to make it better, you can even suppress that by introduce this particle and
see,
make
okay,
this
I,
SU4.
I just didn't have a chance to
yeah. Yeah, this is
that
this
line. Okay,
yeah.
Now I see.
Yeah,
all
this
right.
SU4 invariant, this SU4 invariant.
Yeah.
So then you suppress the log divergence, you get a finite contribution. Of course, you know, proportional to the mass.
Right, okay, I got it. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is a little summary. We found a way to introduce a quartic. And so it worked because we have two Z2 symmetry in our model. The divergence arises only where both Z2s is broken collectively. And you know, we can also do something more to get a small m square by introduce an extra vector-like quarks. So the fine-tuning we found is like 30%. So.
And that's from the top? That's
what?
From the top loop?
Yeah, the top
30%.
Loop. Actually, yeah, 30% is basically from the top loop.
And
yes.
How? And if you live with a log divergence, what is it?
I don't know. We didn't check. But I think it's pretty much the same.
I wouldn't think it would be a big deal. This
one. Yeah, yeah. I think because at the end, we didn't actually survey all the possibility. We just picked some random point. And the point we pick is, you know, that the M have like a few TeV. Actually, it's pretty heavy. The M that decouple the extra guy here.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, if you take like few TeV, this is basically not there. It's not. But we still get like, you know, 30% or something like this.
Mm-hmm.
So I also think it might, but you know, in some parameter space it might, but I don't know. It doesn't seem to help very much. Yeah. So at the end, it's not very important for us. Okay, so this is a model. So let's see what's the phenomenology. So okay, this is a very quick review. So this is two set of class of model. So one is due to the minimal symmetry, the other one is left-right. So in this model, is almost hopeless because what we can find is only like, you know, about less than 5% invisible Higgs decay. And I think many people study the invisible Higgs decay, and what they said is kind of like, oh, this is a boundary. So yeah, not, you know, it's almost a bound.
I don't understand. You're saying the invisible is?
It's decayed. It decayed to the mirror sector, and it's gone.
And
it's
but the branching ratio is just 5%.
Yeah, the branching ratio is 5% because we have to go to the only bridge is the Higgs.
Right. So you're just saying that you would never see the effects of the mirror symmetry. It just looks standard model like Higgs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's almost impossible to see. I guess in LSC. So I think some study have.
It's still find the Higgs, right?
You still find the Higgs. I mean, Higgs
fine.
It's still fine. You wouldn't know there's an extra thing,
yeah,
to solve the Lidov problem.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, this is an example that you know, you have solution for the Lidov hierarchy problem, but you never see.
So shouldn't you get an advertisement for the ILC here?
ILC,
right?
Yeah, that's why ILC will definitely do this.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, so.
But it won't be built.
Not if nobody advertises it.
No, in this scenario, it won't be built. If this was true, we won't build the ILC.
Well, you have to make your predictions now.
Yeah.
Stake your claims.
Yeah, actually, we have more invisible solutions. So.
Yeah.
So in the left right model, it seems brighter because you have the usual prediction from left right symmetry, you have W and Z from left right model. And you have extra thing, and this is more important for us because we want to distinguish us from the original left-right model, because this is the part that solves the problem, right? So we have extra heavy tops, and the important thing is it's colorful. So it's supposed to be very bright and shine in the LSC. So how about in the new model that we propose? Actually, if you go through it, we have introduced some degree of freedom, new degree of freedom, which is extra vector-like quarks to make the Yukawa SU4 invariant. that Marcus suspect is not important. So actually, this is not important because we you know, some parameter we pick is like few TeV, like 4 TeV. So I guess it's also become very hard to actually find this particle. So we just ignore it. We introduce some new coupling, which is our new quartics, but it only affect you know the scalar you know, scattering. So and at this point, we don't want to talk about the scalar because we want to focus on the tops. So let's ignore it again. So okay, this is a bad thing. So maybe I should cover it, but just want to let you know in what's the difference. In the original left-right model, we have the parity that we introduced to suppress the f hat coming to the top loop. This parity also gives you, because it's a parity, this parity also gives you some dark matter parity. And it seems some parameter is actually a viable candidate. But in this model, we lose it because this parity is spontaneously broken. And we lose it, so we don't have dark matter in the model.
So what do you mean by the new model?
You introduce a new quartic, then you actually...
You had to do that, why? Now I lost track of
it. The new quartic, we want to make the model more natural.
I see, so
okay.
if you make the model natural...
More natural, yes.
Then, well, I don't know what you mean by more natural.
Compared to original model.
Right. Well, in other words, 3% versus 30% or something like that?
It's 1% versus 10% and versus 30%.
Which is the 10%? 1%
is standard model.
Okay.
Then we have a model which tells you 10%, it's a left-right twin Higgs model. Then we have this with the new quartic that
and
becomes 10%.
The 10% would still have a stable dark matter candidate.
Yeah, 10% we still have a stable dark matter candidate.
Okay.
But here we lost it.
Okay.
So basically, if you look at the list, the collider signature doesn't have much different from you know from the left right without with or without the new quartic. The new quartic doesn't actually change much of the signature. So we can as well just talk about the original one for the phenomenology. So this is a important parameter. You have two values. You have a this is the Yukawa coupling. And you have this m, which is the mass term of the vector-like singlet quarks. So this guy is fixed by f because we actually cancel. We use the top contribution and the gauge contribution and just tune the f hat or f to cancel the two contribution at one loop. We don't introduce new terms. Okay. So this actually fixed the f hat. By f, and then of course this y is fixed by Tokugawa, fixed by the top mass, and this is arbitrary. We can do whatever we want as long as it's not too big. So this is the new particles. So we want to focus here in the either this the vector boson or the top, especially this guy. This is important. So this gives you roughly the idea of how heavy this guy is. So it's not in scale, it's just order. So basically you have a Z to be heaviest, then you have a W and then go down to heavy top. And then of course you have bundle standard model here down there. And then this is all the pseudo Goldstone boson. So this guy, you can have an idea like this is almost like 200 or 300 GeV. You know, this guy here. And I'll put this over Higgs, 170, and then this is very light. And this guy will be F, let's say like 800 GeV. And this guy will be like two TeV or something, around 2 TeV.
Okay. So do I understand correctly that your normal you know, blue band curve, you would be out on some wing of the blue band curve with 170 GeV here?
170 is still within.
Well, it's within the 95%. Or 90% or something.
Yeah, it's pretty heavy.
Preferred values, of course, 90 or something like
right.
that. So it'd be out on the wing.
Oh, I guess so. Yeah.
Okay.
So basically, the typical things is what happened is you produce this guy like Zhaoyang, so you produce them on shell. So this guy will just decay. and then you can get, you know, on the decay change, you can get this guy, this guy, and this guy on the way. So, and first of all, the easier one is just for do, the easier one to see is at the Z. So you put this heavy Z, you can look at the E plus E minus decay, look at the invariant mass, you should see a peak. And for the WH, you can draw them, produce, singly produce, and then this guy will just decay to a heavy top, on sharp, of course. And then you just keep decaying, and then back to our standard model T and standard model W, and have a nice atomic channel, decay channel. So if you look at this change, then you see, oh, fine, it's very nice, we have a lepton to trigger, and we have a lot of particle on shell, they are all produced on shell, and we can actually try to reconstruct them, and especially this guy, because we want to actually see it with a certain mass.
So in a typical LHC 100 inverse femtobarn year, how many of these guys do you make?
Let's see, the cross section to produce a T is like...
First of all, you were advertising these WH and ZHs,
right.
So how many of those do you make?
I think it's... Let me see... I don't remember like how much this guy is. This guy would be like a few hundred femtobarn to be the cross section producing this guy. So, I mean, I think the branching ratio is like 20%. So if you multiply that, it's a factor of 5.
I'm confused. So I mean, there's the direct production of the TH. I'm prepared to believe that might be 100 inverse femtobarns, but I'm not. These WHs are.
This can be produced on shell.
Well, sure, but
yes.
There's a small coupling and they're quite heavy, right?
Yeah, it's quite heavy. It's like 2 TeV or something.
Yeah, so I'm not so sure that it would make very many of the WHs and
actually
THs.
We actually do. Alright, so this is something else. So we actually did some study. This is the work with with Shufang Su.
Right. Yeah. So
we're
asking for numbers.
The number is for the top production is 100 or 200 femtobarn.
Yeah, that I accept.
You agree?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's probably fine. That's direct top production. But
no. It's actually production coming from the WHDK.
Okay, I'm surprised it's that much coming from the WH and CH.
Actually, W is quite abundantly produced. Yeah.
Well, I'm surprised by a number as large as that.
Oh, really? So,
why don't you consider it too tough, heavy protection?
Yeah, we usually look at that, but it seems like this is more efficient because of phase space, I guess. Heavy top.
Phase space?
Yeah.
Because the heavy Gibbs boson is like twice the mass of the TH, so even it's pair produced for TH, so I guess the ratio, the rate is still larger than this.
Oh, you mean from the ZH?
No, I'm saying that it's just considered the
gluon. Oh, gluon?
Yeah. I'm saying that TH must be pair produced. But the mass is just half of this.
He's not pair producing it, actually. He's pair producing with a D. So he's actually, with the W, maybe that's the answer. With the W, he's producing a THB.
And B, yes.
Yeah, but the phase space
is
similar.
It's
that's
heavy.
What
it's twice as heavy as TH.
Right.
Yeah.
And you've got a much stronger coupling, glue.
Maybe.
Yeah, there's a resonance enhancement, right? I mean, that's...
Yes, it is a... I don't know about glue, I mean, just from because it's colored just from QCD production. I don't know how much it is. Maybe it's... Yeah. So, but, yeah, they might have some other process that can produce it. I'm not totally sure if we exhaust everything, but just for this special process, and that is the number that we get.
So can I ask a different question about the K can you remind me what is the phi? That's a pseudo.
Oh, yeah, this is.
Couples dominant.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is the
right-hand sector or something. Or
yeah, this is the you know the charge scalar sit at the right-handed piece.
Okay.
So yeah, this is a charge extra charge scalar here, and this guy with the knot here is a Schuler scalar, also sit in the right-handed piece. So it's a third and fourth component. This is the third component, and this is the fourth component. Okay, actually, however, the color heavy talk can be actually pretty dark. So from the previous discussion, we see there's a lot of heavy talk is produced, and you probably can see it. But this is under one condition, which have a certain value of m, which we take to be let's say 150 GeV for that m. So all that signature actually depend on what m you choose, and in certain m you can become very undetectable. So in this special case where you set m equal to zero, and what happened? This is m. To remind you, so this is the Tokugawa. So if you set this guy to zero, you throw it away, and what happened is the mixing is gone. So this will be just our standard model top sitting here, and then this right-handed top of standard model, and then the other piece would just be the heavy top and heavy top. So they are totally decoupled. There are no mixing. And because this guy is singled under SU2 and this guy is only doubled under SU2R, so they never couple to SU2L. So what happened is, this is the basic structure of the decay chain if you produce by WH. So you can imagine if M is not zero, you have all the mixing. So you can count, this is right-handed, and this is standard model, this left-handed. So you somehow go through some of the coupling, you can go through it, and then you become RW. Okay, and then the RW can also quote decay leptonically, so you have a nice signal. If you take this M away, this connection is lost. So what you can go, you always sit at the right-handed sector. So you can imagine you cannot decay to back to here. Unless you go off shell, but you can. The other possibility, you can go to the scalar, which also sit at the right-handed piece. Okay, you can go to this or go to the off shell WH. But whatever you do, you can only go to the hadronic channel because you can. If you go leptonic, you have to produce a lepton and a neutrino, but that neutrino is right-handed. And it's usually heavy if you want the seesaw to work. You know, somehow seesaw to work.
But you still have just, you know, going back to the same thing, you still have just color product. It's colored, so you just pair produce.
You just produce.
Like mad.
Yeah, you just produce like mad, and you produce a bunch of them. But then you have to look at the decay chain.
Sure, but I mean, not the W's. I'm saying you just produce the T's.
Yeah, yeah. It's
the right handed things.
Yeah, the same story actually go to the T. Because now the T is purely right-handed, you never touch the W right-handed, left-handed W.
Yeah, but what about blue production?
No,
yeah.
it's produced.
But
then
how
you
does it decay?
You look at how it decay, right?
Yeah.
It's produced, and then you look at how it decay.
Right.
And in the typical change of this guy, let me see. So you have to go through, you know, you decay to this, go to the some scalar, it's right-handed. Then you have some mixing here. Because this T is not totally standard model if you M is not zero.
Yeah.
So you have a left and right mixing. So you can go jump to the standard model, you know, left-handed piece, and then go to the usual decay change.
Well, that seems pretty good.
Seems pretty good,
me.
Right? Yes. 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 Yes.
But the problem is.
That's good. That's good. No, that's no problem. So, that's no problem. But what happened, just, you know, this one special case here. So what happens if you take this away? Then those nice channels is just gone. So what the heavy talk can decay to is just all jet. So the only thing, so this is actually also in the previous works. We kind of conclude that if you set M equal to zero, you have, you know, you almost have no chance to see the heavy tops. But the only thing you can see is the ZH.
So just make sure I understand. This is not quite clear on this slide, but
mm-hmm.
you're just, I just want to understand your claim. You're claiming that in the same limit where M is zero, this new right-handed top does
right.
not decay semi-leptonically. It
that's
decays
right.
in the visible sector only to jets.
To jet, yes,
okay.
right. Yeah, that's the claim. So the conclusion is very hard to see.
It's not dark,
but
it's sort of murky.
Yeah.
Sort of muddy.
I'm still
yeah.
confused though, but I mean, if you look at the phi naught and the lepton channel as you have...
This one?
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is...
Isn't that a decent signal?
Yeah, this is an extra, but if you look, if you can pull one of the phi naught out of the, whatever going on here, and then you have a lepton, E plus E minor, mu plus E minus things. But this extra vertex you have to put in is very suppressed. It's suppressed by.
But a decay is a decay. I mean,
Let me tell you how suppressed it is.
No, but the
huh?
I mean.
It decay. It still decay.
The phi naught is not required, so it's just an extra
yeah.
body decay that can be there.
You can either do this
or
do this. They both decay. But if you do this, you decay like hadronically.
So.
But you do this, you get an extra 2 lepton, but it's suppressed by a factor of 10 to the 6, I think.
Okay, and that same coupling doesn't appear in the upper diagram, the M not equals 0 diagram?
This one?
Yeah,
this one is the same thing. You can either have it or not have it. So usually you don't have to have it.
Mm-hmm.
So you already have a nice signal, it's good. But here, if you want to have a nice signal, you have to have it, then it's totally suppressed.
Yeah,
if you don't
okay,
have it, then...
Okay, I didn't understand that you had enough WHW mixing to,
yeah.
to go directly. All right.
Yeah. So basically, this is the claim. So, but what... Then my check asks, so it's nice. So why do we want to study the M equal to zero case? All right, so this is some of the reason I can think of. So first of all, you know, M actually controls some of the contribution to the precision measurement. Because it's through the mixings. So if you set it to zero, you can actually kill that, you know, some part of the contribution. I don't know if it's good or not, but you can kill some of the contribution. So it works perfectly the same if you even set it to zero. And this is a minimal set of parameters. And it's actually natural to do it. You can find some symmetry and argue that it will not be generated if you set it to zero. And of course, it's most importantly, we don't want to miss finding our model if somehow n is become very small. So this is explicitly what happened if you produce the TH by this change, this channel. Like this part is still the same; it doesn't change. The thing which change is the decay. So because of this, you have to go through the off-shell WH. Or you can go to scalar. I can't estimate, and seems like they are almost the same. But the important thing is you have to produce the two jet at the end, and this two jet is unlikely to be B. Okay, so the signal is to be two jet, and you are compete with the four jet QCD background, which I don't know how big. I think you have to be order of even more the micro bond or something. So, and the signal is, like I said, is like a few hundred Van der Waals. It's very, very small. But we have a some handle of this because we have 2B. And we know if you have a WH to be like about 2TeV, the first B jet have a large PT, like around 800 GeV. And the second one will, and other two jet will be very likely to have 400 GeV. So we can actually put some cut on the one jet, one B jet, and one high PT usual jet. And we also have the two resonant going on here. One is the TH and WH. We can try to reconstruct. and that also can suppress the background. So that is what we try to do, and this is just a very rough graph from CalHAP. This is the production of T and B, heavy T and B, and this is the PT of the associate B productions. So you can see it's like this. So if you cut it like 600 here GV, you can keep a lot of them. So unfortunately, we don't actually have information of B tagging at this kind of energy. So I think, you know, for PT larger than 300 GV, there's no study available and telling us like how efficient it is. So we will take like around 300 or 400 GV. We will take like the value that is given by, you know, at low PT, which is like, you know, I think it's 200 or 300 GV, like about 40%. That means you lose like 60% of your B. You just miss them. And then you also have rejection, which is 2.5%. That means you think the jet has a B, well, it's not. It's 2%, 2.5% of the time. So so for higher PT, that 800 GV TB, we just assume we cannot pack it. It just behave like a usual jet. And then, so our signal is actually just 1B and 3J. So, we still keep the, you know, either the event with 1B or 2B. So to be conservative, we take the PT to be, for the B, to be 300 GV, and for the high PT jet to be 600 GV to keep most of the signal. And this is roughly some estimation. We run a quick calculation from either CalHAP or MagRaph. So this is a signal. So you can see this is the before anything. It's like about 200, you know, picobond. 0.2 is a 200 femtobond. Then you put a discard, you will reduce a factor of half almost. And then because of B tagging, you have to multiply by these factors. Reduce the signal, you miss some of the signal, and you get something like this. And this is three possible QCD background. You either have 4 light jet, or 2B, 2 light jet, or 4B jet. And this, of course, is terrible. But after you put a card, you can see it's reduced quite a bit. And this is, then you put the B tagging factor in, you get something like this. So our signal over background after this stage is still a factor of 100. So the background is a factor of 100 bigger than our signal, the total cross section. If you look at the signal over the arrow, the square root of the background is factor of 3 for a luminosity of, let's say, 30 inverse femtobond. So this seems possible, and we have still something else to do. We can actually make a cut of the window where the invariant mass is within a certain mass we expect, for example, the T and W. We can further, expect a further suppression of the background, so hopefully we can get better signal of the background ratio. We haven't done it yet, so this is what we are going to do. So let me conclude. So we have solved the lab paradox by twin mechanism, and we can introduce a three-level coordinates. And by doing that, we can improve the fine-tuning from 10% to 30%. And the signal is basically unchanged. We have W and Z at QTV, and we have a top quark as about 800 GV. And this particle is, you know, if it exists, it should be seen at LHC. And even in the decoupling case, I mean, reconstructing the heavy top is still possible. So, and we are still working on it. Thank you.
So if you went to pair production, you have 4 Bs and 4 jets.
Oh, pair produced the T?
Yeah. Why isn't that a lot better?
It might be better. It might be better, but we haven't looked at it yet because the production rate is smaller. It's not much smaller. It's smaller.
So maybe it's a possible thing to forget. We haven't.
What's the mass of the phi naught?
The phi naught is actually three parameters. Phi naught is one of the mu terms.
But you expect it to be the lighter than Hayes.
Yeah, because it's just we choose that to be. Let me put it this way. So if you don't do anything special, the phi naught is zero. It's an exact boson boson. So we have to put it by hand one special mu terms or b mu terms, which actually give mass to the phi naught. So it's actually a free parameter. You can put whatever it is, but you don't want it to be big. But it's pretty much free.
So there's bounds on it from left.
Yeah, that's why we don't want it to be light either. So
you're assuming it's above 114?
We just make it 150 for analysis. We didn't actually do the phenomenology or scale it, but we just put it 150 to get around the bound. So, but it can be anything.
Any other questions? Thanks for your